CliffCentral.com. Unbelievable.
Yeah, good morning. We're live. It is Wednesday morning. It is the 8th of July, you know. Keep track of these things. How else do you know what day of the week it is?
Right.
And this morning we are joined by Sia Sangweni and by Damon Calvari.
Damon? Yes, good morning.
Yes.
Oh, are those your hands, Damon?
Oh, sorry. I shouldn't do that.
Yeah, we heard noises. I thought...
Sorry.
I thought your connection...
Rubbing hands together. Sorry about that.
What? No, I'm not taking the piss, but it sounded very harsh.
Mm. Well, you know...
Are you cold?
It's a bit chilly, yeah, yes.
No, there was quite a wind blowing last night. I was trying to go to sleep, and I just heard the trees, you know, rustling, and it sounded like a very windy evening.
Well, according to the weather forecasters, if you can believe them, you know?
Yeah, because fake news.
Who do you believe?
Exactly. There's a huge cold front that's coming below Cape Town, and they say it might even reach Namibia if it keeps on track. So
I don't believe. Ooh.
So if it reaches Namibia,
Jesus.
I mean, gee whiz.
I don't believe that.
No. My wife thinks it's going to snow in Johannesburg this weekend. That's what she thinks.
I would love that. You know, winter has achieved something if there's actual snow. Plus, I think the kids would love it. And Damon was telling me that Alexa's daughter is going on school holidays in the next couple of days. Very exciting.
Yeah, I was telling my wife that I'm going for a cycle. I'm going riding on Sunday for the first time in about 4 or 5 months.
Sure. Trust you to choose a cold weekend.
Yes. How are you going to ride in the snow, I was told?
Let's see. I mean, maybe Bernice knows something you don't.
Well, if you can believe the forecasters.
So, it's an interesting... You know, it's an interesting time because we still haven't heard from government when level 3 ends. And there's still people – imagine being the smoker, all right? Now, I know we've spoken about this a couple of times before, but I know a couple of smokers, among them my parents, you know, Leanne, who's on the show. I've got some other friends who smoke. I've got friends who smoke weed. I've got friends who smoke Hubli. I've got – You know, all these tobacco products, and they're all classed in the same thing, according to Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, and you can't get any of it yet. And by now, all of them have their dealers, and by now, they've all established supply lines. And I don't think it has done anything. It may have reduced smoking in maybe 1 out of every 100 people. But every smoker I know has not stopped smoking because of this rule. And I think it's really running thin. I mean, the court challenges are mounting as well. And people are just, I don't think this has improved anybody's life. I think that they've just got to give it up now. Like, can't they just stand down, you know? Get on with it.
I think they'll have some egg on their face, if they admit to it now and they have to loosen and relax those laws.
They've taken it this far. It's very difficult if you're a government to after all this time, to admit that you was a mistake. So they're going to wait. So they'll spin it a bit.
You're right.
They'll make something up. Like, we've got to support the tobacco. They'll make it about the tobacco farmers, perhaps.
Mm. Yeah, they'll say, because there's this big letter that's been sent in that we spoke about on Monday, and maybe that's going to be the excuse. And then they'll say, oh, well, you know, we decided against our better judgment we would do this so that the people who work on the tobacco farms can earn a living. Anyway, I don't know. But you know what? You broke lockdown. You had some friends over, right, Damon?
Well, it's shocking. It's absolutely shocking. I feel so – I don't know what it is. I feel so pathetic. I've been very worried and scared about this coronavirus, and I've been adhering to everything, no visitors, nothing. And then some old friends arrived that we haven't seen in a long time, and I don't know what it is. I didn't have the balls to, I was happy to see them. I let them into the house. First we were all wearing masks, but after 5 minutes the masks came off. And the gin and tonics came out. And
your new favorite thing.
My new favorite thing. They said that's going to stop now because it turns out we don't have any money. So the drinking will stop. But that's beside the point. And then we got pizzas. Pizzas arrived. And,
that sounds very nice. It sounds very normal. It sounds like ordinary human interaction. And
No.
Listen, we've all got to realize, like, there's suddenly this new layer of fear that's crept in because people are now starting to hear stories of people close to them who are dying of coronavirus, and there are only 3,000 people in the country who have died of it. So if you haven't yet, you know.
Only 3,000.
Damon, it is. I mean, the flu every year takes out more people, and we don't stop everything, and we don't make these dumb rules. I mean, it's going to happen, right? And everybody knew this. Lockdown wasn't there to stop the virus. I mean, we keep repeating this stuff. It's so boring.
Sorry. Should I mention flattening the curve?
No, because you notice they haven't used that terminology at all since probably about week four.
No, because we're beyond it. We've moved on now. So we're talking about peaking in September.
Yeah, so this is why you just make your as a responsible adult, you make your decisions. If people want to come to your house and you feel like it's okay, then you do it. You take your chances. If you think you're healthy enough and you're young enough and you don't have any comorbidities, then you go for it. If you're not sure and you're careful and you're scared, then that's your right. You know, you tell people, hey, listen, if you don't mind, I'd like to keep going like this. But don't ever mistake what is good for you as being good for everybody else. That's not too much to ask.
That's the principle.
The argument is that we're all supposed to be considering everybody else.
You can't.
And it's not about you. About everybody.
If you were considering everybody else, you wouldn't drive a car. You wouldn't have children, because all of those things have an impact on other people, and nobody does. They all think about themselves. So let's not pretend that we give us everything.
COVID-19 is a bit different, but I hear your example.
Oh, yeah. So it's Damon, tricky, but I'll actually agree with Gareth on this one.
I'm proud of
can
you.
Can I play Gareth?
I'm
Gareth,
proud of you
on
for having
notes.
People around to your house. It's good. You're resuming normal life.
Can I play you this quick 17-second video? It's on the same topic. All right, this woman gets stopped and she hasn't got a mask on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Why are you angry if I wear a mask? Thank you, because you're wearing a mask out of stupidity and you're further pushing the agenda. And the agenda is the deep state, which wants to control all of us and have us living in fear and thinking that you're contaminated. It's a false narrative. And when you wear a mask, which you can certainly do, you are further pushing the agenda that is condemning all of us and keeps us living in a state of terror.
Are we living in a state of terror?
I think I think this is probably the closest to a state of terror most people under the age of 50 have ever lived. Yes.
Terror?
Yeah, because you suddenly have government imposing laws on you and rules on you that were never imposed during your lifetime. Certainly I could say it's true for me.
But they're trying to save, we're trying to save lives, aren't we?
Are we? Is that the reason?
Well, then what could the reason be? We want to destroy the economy.
I think a lot of governments are enjoying the power, frankly. Listen, that woman sounds like a crazy person. You know this is true. This National Coronavirus Command Council, whoever they are, because we don't even know who's on it.
Good point.
These people are like, they make rules. They don't tell us how they make the rules. They don't tell us what the reasons are for the rules. They just tell us. And that's not an elected government. We don't know who's on that Corona Council.
Oh, I thought we knew. I just hadn't read up on it.
No. And the minute any group of people who are not duly elected people, and you may notice that Parliament has hardly been called in to give their approval on anything because it's just the executive, just rubber, you know, they just want it rubber stamped by everybody else.
Well, they've got to make quick decisions.
Yeah, sure. Wow. Yeah, like you can't wear open shoes or, you know, online businesses couldn't operate for a long time and blah, blah, blah. It's just dumb stuff. And who's accountable? Like, if we get to the end of this, and we will eventually, when we get to the end of this, and people go, this has been a disastrous decision. Or they go, this has been terrific. This has been really good. Then those people get the credit or those people get the blame. So we need to know who they are. And there needs to be a penalty for them if they were wrong.
Well, the thing is, in hindsight, if we had to rewind, how should we have handled this?
That's what everybody's asking. And I don't know the answer. I'm not government, but
oh, I got the answer.
What?
So when it first happened in Wuhan, whatever, we should have just closed the borders. and but allowing South Africans back into South Africa, but then you have to go into 2 week quarantine, and we had to just close everything for a few weeks. What else could we have done?
Maybe they carried on normal. I mean, that was eventually what we did, and it took us
too late.
Well, the rest of the world,
yeah, it was.
Some countries were even later than us, like Britain, for example. So,
the USA did nothing for 2 months, for the whole of January and the whole of February and most of February.
No, in February that was when Trump said no more flights in from China.
Well, that was like the middle of February already, or the 8th of February,
Don't change your mind.
No. I don't remember everything. I'm not a historian. I haven't kept the diary of Damon Calvary.
Okay, well, speaking of the diary of Damon Calvary, we've got lots of messages, but this is very important. You are onto 2 bowel movements a day at the moment, Damon. This is very good news.
Well, I could. You know what? Sia said to me, Damon, give me some thoughts to some talking points for this morning, and I
this is
myself,
what you felt.
And talking points.
Share.
I assume that talking points is personal stuff, not what's going on in the world. The first thing that came to my mind was Ghislaine Maxwell, but I thought, you've spoken about her already.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah.
Don't you think it's funny that her name?
Call her Ghislaine.
Don't you think it's funny that her name's Ghislaine?
Ghislaine.
Oh, is it if you look at the spelling, it looks like jizz.
So,
I felt like you enjoyed emphasizing that first syllable a little too much.
I found out some stuff about her, though, and we'll get to your bowel movements later, because for some people it's very important.
Yes.
Apparently, she was in a house that she bought for $1 million in cash in rural New Hampshire on like a, I think it's a 12-hectare property. I can't remember the size, but it's a big property. And that was where she was hiding.
So was she actually hiding?
Yeah. I mean, she's clearly been aided and abetted by other people. Yeah, she couldn't have done this on her own.
And how long did the FBI know about her being there? Were they surveilling her for a while, taking video footage to make sure it was her?
Yeah, it must have been.
Where she was hiding?
Yeah, and apparently she was in driving distance from the what do they call him, the Attorney General for New York, the Southern District of New York, who's the guy who issued the woman who issued the arrest warrant. How's that?
Sure.
All right, so Damon, here's some compliments for you, because we don't give these to you often. Michelle says, Damon is always great for a bit of change on a Wednesday. They're really enjoying you here. Duncan in Wimbledon says, I always enjoy it when Damon's on the show, but hearing him speak about COVID is worse than Sia's singing. Damon is definitely an enlightened empath. I can sense the energy. His energy is heightened. That's from Eddie.
Eddie, deep thinker.
Yeah, that sounds very
profound. Some other people saying that you are absolutely entitled to tell your wife she's a moron because none of the weather forecasts say snow, not one.
Oh, but there was the implication. It was insinuated when they show this large cold front approaching, and that's actually not true. I read an article. They said they expected snow over large parts of the country. They did say
that. Do you even still watch weather reports?
Not at all. Never. But when you're on Twitter and they show you a satellite image, and then you read the article, they said bad weather.
Scroll past. Siri will give you a.
But back to Ghislaine Maxwell.
Yeah.
What are your predictions? Is she going to be murdered? Is she going to be killed? Will she kill herself? What will happen?
Any of these is a possibility, right?
Do you think, and another question, do you think she's been spending the last year with a prison consultant to prepare for this? And you know, you've heard of that.
Didn't we have a prison consultant on our show once, and they told us what you can expect in prison and what you should know before you go in? And
yeah, well, there was also one of the actresses, was it Lori Loughlin, Huffman? One of them hired a prison consultant.
Weinstein hired a prison consultant.
Okay.
Yes. I don't know if it was a real one. It could have been one of those ones that act in the movies. You might have got confused because he's in the movies.
Can I go down a rant path quickly?
I thought that was done already.
No, I'm pretty furious this morning because someone sent me a screenshot, and I don't follow this person, but You know, we started the TV show, and it's just amazing how many angry people there are in this world. When
people don't like you, got a TV show, eh?
Well, it's a handful of disaffected losers who've never really had much going for them either. So
some are puppets.
Uh-oh.
Anyway, this is from, you remember Rob Forbes, Damon?
Rob Forbes. He is a DJ on 5FM.
Right. Mm-hmm. So he tweets, I think he's in a conversation. Someone sent me a screenshot because I don't follow him. I don't even know whether he's still on the show or what he's doing.
Apparently he is.
So apparently he says something about how our guests for tonight's show, Vusi Tembekwayo and Jeremy Nell, the cartoonist, are on together. And Rob says, does Vusi know what he signed up for? And someone else replies. And then he says this. This is Rob Forbes now. Imagine having a whole TV talk show you want to pretend is relevant and then invite that stupid cartoonist, lol. Now, I would just like to say that if you are a minnow in the radio industry and you're someone who's never achieved a fucking thing and you're someone whose entire contribution to South African radio can be written onto a toothpick and there still be space for the whole Bible once you've finished, and you're someone who's been so mediocre that I don't think anyone even knows whether you are still doing your show or not, or whether you go on holiday or not, because it would make no difference. If you're that kind of person, he says, imagine having a whole TV talk show you want to pretend is relevant. You have to imagine, Rob Forbes, because you will never have a TV show. No one will ever ask you to host anything like that. And imagine having a radio show that's successful. Why don't you start with the small things? Start with the things you can achieve. Like, over how many years has this guy been on radio and he's made not a dent in any ratings? He's done absolutely zero to raise the ratings. In fact, as far as I can tell, that station has fallen into the doldrums to the extent that they now are basically, like most of the SABC, just living off of state money, taxpayers' money, which has been pumped in to keep the place alive.
Well, I got some cook.
Hold on a second. Let me tell you something about this. If you're going to talk about me and me trying to be relevant, which is something I've never struggled with, Rob Forbes, you need to make sure that your house is in order. You have been there for however many years. Certainly, we left 6 or 7 years ago.
Six.
And you, six, you were still nobody after having 3-4 years of doing it. And you remain nobody in the media landscape. You remain someone who is switching on your microphone and playing songs, and has not so much as created a stir. I don't know how many followers this guy's got on social media, but I don't think it's gone up tremendously. You have had access to a public platform, and you've done nothing with it. You should be ashamed of yourself to call yourself anything in media, and to then comment on me like you even have the right to say something when you're such a loser yourself just drives me to drink. So why don't you shut your mouth and go back to being average and mediocre? So sure. such a yokel in radio terms that you should be humiliated enough to go and hide. In fact, if I were you, I wouldn't switch on my mic today. See if you can just play songs and if anyone notices. How about that?
Apparently, as I was saying, apparently, 5FM, which used to be one of the cash cows at the SABC, was one of the very few entities that made a profit, actually made a loss in this last financial year, according to my sources.
Not surprised with people like that on the show.
Well, the thing is, Gareth, people on Twitter, they want to create a stir, they get bored, it's lockdown, they just want to write whatever goes through their mind, and they forget that there's actually a world out there. It's the Lord of the Flies syndrome.
Okay, but take a step back.
You feel you're hiding away. You say hidden away.
Something that goes through your mind. How is this something that goes through your mind and makes sense?
Well, you should have deleted it. You should have written it, tweeted it, and then deleted it 30 seconds later. That's what I've done many times.
I normally, and don't give me this thing, you know, for example, here's Brendan who says, Gareth, why do you even care what this person thinks? I don't until I see it, and then I'm a human being like anyone else. And if someone is making these kinds of insinuations that I'm trying to be relevant, ooh, you know, I am so over. Because of Twitter, everybody thinks They have a say, and everybody thinks their say counts equally. Well, let me remind you, you are welcome to have a say, but mostly no one cares what you think. And occasionally it gets the attention of someone like me, and I'm going to tell you where you fit in. Now, I don't have to hold back. I don't see why I have to be polite to someone like this. I never had any beef with him before, so I don't know why he would be saying this now.
And no, you once told me you once said on air that he was terrible.
Did
or
I?
Something like that. Yeah. I was called into the office.
I thought that was just objective truth. I don't think that was having a beef with someone.
I was called into the office.
Prove me wrong. I mean, give me one ratings diary where he went up. That's all I'd ask for.
Well. Let's just talk about the plain obvious figures. When you left 5FM at the
it tanked completely.
It was never on just recovered. Over 2 million listeners. Now they're on 670,000 listeners.
See? Yeah. I mean, don't give me your opinion when you're losing at that rate. Don't tell me what you think, because you don't count.
He also went on to call ENC a vomit TV.
Oh, right. Okay, so now our whole TV channel's wrong, but he's right. Rob Forbes. Great success story of South African media.
And he couldn't even close a cupboard. He used to leave the cupboards open all the time.
Still on 6,000 rand a month or whatever they churn out to keep him on the air.
No. If you, they probably get paid a lot more than that. That's why the SABC's got no money.
Damon, how does the fact that he doesn't close cupboards?
I'm just pointing out facts.
Oh, okay. Just feel like now you're getting random things off your chest.
No, I remember. It used to annoy everybody.
No, Gareth, excuse me. I get how it's...
You know, I'm a very relaxed guy. I'm carrying on with my life. I've got... And frankly, you know, I didn't have to do this TV show either. I thought it would be a fun thing to do. I told you I was getting bored. And it landed in my lap. And I've been able to... And Sia will tell you this. We've got complete editorial freedom here, which is amazing. It never happens in TV.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think they'd give me that if they thought I was some kind of average loser who wouldn't pull up the ratings, and if they thought that we were going to do something terrible here. And so far, it looks like things are all steam ahead. I mean, we've got a hell of a show today. And Vusi Tebekwayo is terrific, and you'll see him, and he explains that that incredible video which he put together, which has gone viral, and everybody's talking about it.
So that's been pretty relevant.
Yeah, I think so.
I just hope your guests are not... didn't do the interview in their gardens, because you're watching the show at 8:30 in the evening, and I don't want to see a daylight thing where Jeremy Mansfield was in his garden. I mean, what was he thinking? I didn't like that.
It was so funny when we recorded him, because he just got up at some point in the interview and went to put his dogs away. I was like, what is? I mean, you know, some people are eccentric, and you could call Jeremy that, but I think he's like almost lost it a little bit some of the time, because he said, oh, I'm just going to go and lock up my dogs. And we're in the middle of recording. It's a strange human being.
But thank you, Damon. I'll note. No sunlight. Yeah. You wouldn't like that.
Am I the only one who noticed that? Hey?
No.
I think you're one of the few who are bothered by it.
You've never seen TV where, like, for example, they have a guest from overseas and it's daytime where the guest is.
That's different because we know it's overseas.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Okay, then obviously there's something wrong with me. I'm obviously the only person who noticed that. Okay. Okay.
We've taken it into consideration.
Fair enough. No, fair enough.
Look, I think...
I'm glad I didn't send it a WhatsApp or an email about this. I'd rather bring it up. Yeah. And I wouldn't tweet it.
Yeah. We're going to keep on keeping on. That's the bottom line.
All right. Damon is my favorite Wednesday guest, is what we've just received from Frank. He loves you, Damon. Thinks you're great. How's that?
Well, he's been Frank.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Here is a message from somebody who's very upset. They read that the CEO of NASPAS was given a bonus of 237 million rand. Can you believe that? Oki, this is Oki's message.
Well, the biggest story is that NASPAS closed all their magazines.
Yeah,
shame, man.
That was a huge thing. And then a week ago, they paid out hundreds of millions of rands in bonuses. So people are very upset.
But remember, those magazines were not bringing in any. I wish people could just pay attention to the story instead of jumping to the immediate headline that these guys are getting money and these ones are being fired. You know how these companies work, right? If your one division is not bringing in money, you shut down that division. You fire all those people because they're not making money. It's not an employment scheme. It's a business. Mm. NASPAS as a business is running very, very well because they've got shares in a company called Tencent in China, which is tremendously successful and has delivered incredible results. Now, the people who at NASPAS made the decision to buy Tencent shares instead of reinvesting in Heisgenoot and Drum are the smart people who deserve 200 million rand bonuses. And you know what? It's a private business. They can pay themselves whatever they like. Don't you think?
Yeah, fair.
I mean, it just leaves a bad taste in the mouth. Imagine if you put yourself in the position of someone who's just lost their job.
Well, if you're so brilliant, go and start your own. If you're so good at magazines, go and start your own one that won't go out of business. And then
No, magazines are passé.
That's precisely my point.
We need to move on.
So all those people who have a criticism, I don't know what these guys. I mean, it does leave a bad taste because you think, well, these people are profiteering in a time of real difficulty. But, I mean, Jeff Bezos has broken records for his own personal fortune during lockdown because Amazon is one of those businesses that has grown during lockdown, one of the few, right?
Yeah, but he has come under a lot of criticism for his minimum pay, his minimum wages policies.
Then don't work for him.
Well, I'm just telling you, he's come under criticism.
Well, don't work
starvation wages.
You can criticize him all you like. If you're a staff member, you can go and have a meeting with him because he's the boss of your company and he pays you money, and I'm sure you can get to see him. And if you can't, you can see one of the underlings who will communicate it to him. But the fact is, if you don't want to work there, don't work there. If I offer you 5 rand to do something, someone else offers you 10 rand, go and work for the 10 rand person. Don't say, oh, Garrett's paying so little. That's how the world works.
Well, it's just you're looking at it from A equals O plus L, accounting point of view.
Which I was very bad at,
wow.
By the way.
I have not thought about that since the one term I did it and flunked. Wow.
Oh, did you drop it after that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean,
yes, you
let's just remember as that the reality is that Media 24 is not a profitable company, whereas Tencent is, and NASPAS owns both. They're going to shut down the one, which is what they're doing by clearing out all these magazines that don't make the money and cost them a lot.
And it's just some.
Yeah.
Some publications will still continue. Some are moving digitally, but it's just some.
I can't imagine the people who buy Heisgenoot are going to suddenly go online.
I think Heisgenoot is one of the publications that will still remain printing.
Yeah.
Yeah, Heisgenoot, you, and Landbo Weekblad will continue.
Landbo Weekblad?
That's very.
Who knew? Yeah.
Who knew that?
They'll still be producing.
Is Farmers Weekly still around?
Hey, Sia, I see that you're speaking on a panel about the future of media.
Oh, geez, yeah.
Tell us about it. That sounds good. When is this? I want to watch.
And I hope it's relevant, Sia.
Yes.
You know, it's one of those things that you say yes to, like 40,000 years ago.
Yeah.
And then you forget up until they start talking about it. You're like, oh, shucks, yeah, there's that. Right. Yeah, I'm actually very excited about it to see then what the conversation will be like, because it's quite a wide variety of guests, like some people from Proudly South Africa, and we have Brent, who, you know, we started off with. There's someone from the Sowetan. There's someone from an ad agency, Apex Media. And so we'll be discussing
Nobody from Media 24 on Aspects. No, because they're free. They got a lot of time. They can't make
Yeah, they've got some time on their hands.
So the bottom line of this conversation is, I think what a lot of people in media are trying to find out, how these times are creating spaces for opportunity. And I mean, look, how many people do you know who've been laid off and whatnot over the past couple of weeks?
But more importantly, when is this thing and how will we watch it all? See it or experience it. It's a webinar, I'm assuming.
Yeah, it's tomorrow morning at 10 a.m.
There we go. I'm putting it in my diary.
Thank you, because I've had to do that as well.
But you have to register for it. How do you register?
So just Google the future of media.
Yeah,
it's done by Arena Events, and then you can go into their website and log on and whatnot.
Arena events. Oh. Very good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get to some headlines for this morning. There's quite a lot going on in the world. Outer have taken the latest tolling battle over contracts to court. Apparently, Outer, they want to force the National Roads Agency through the Protection of Personal Information Act to disclose information about contracts that it has with long-distance road tolling companies.
Oh, gosh.
The lobby group claims there's a possibility companies could be benefiting from excessive profits. You don't say. I mean, isn't SANRAL really just a front?
Don't you ever feel like sometimes some stories have been plucked out of 2015 and still 5 years later we're still dealing with it?
Artis Wayne Duvenacher explained, if there is undue profit being made, if they're increasing their revenues, the money should be going towards lower toll fees or SANRAL. We want to know exactly what happened and they will not show us. Yeah, I think investigate these guys. They're a public entity. We should be able to look into their finances. Any person in this country, even if you don't pay tax, should be able to look into this stuff. The companies do not belong to... That's different to NASPAS that we were talking about just a second ago, because this is a state-owned business. In other words, the people of the country have a share in it.
That's
a nice cough,
good.
Damon. That sounds COVID-ish.
No, man, it's a very subtle, little, tiny little cough, man. I even turned my head away.
That is what you call subtle.
Here's a controversial comment from Tulas Messi. He was the guy who told us that the fire pool was a decent thing for the former president to spend his money on. Do you remember that? Let's not forget Tulas, who was there then as Minister of whatever it was, Public Works.
What is he now?
He's now Minister of Labor and Employment.
Wow.
Yeah, he's still around. He's got what they call tenure. He can't go wrong. You know, he's basically, it doesn't matter how much you fuck up in government, you've still got a job if you're in the right coterie of people. Anyway, he says, refugees have a right to employment in South Africa.
Oh, I saw that, yes.
Now, this is very controversial because there are lots of people in South Africa, I don't know, call them xenophobes, who think that people from outside the country have no right to be here and that jobs, if there are jobs, should first go to South Africans. And then there are people who say, well, actually, it is the job of the government of this country to protect the interests of everybody, including refugees, and that refugees have just as much right, and if they have the ability, even more right than a local person who just happens to be someone born here, to jobs. It's really up to the worker and to the employer to come to some kind of arrangement, and it's got nothing to do with government. There are a number of different interests competing here. I mean, what is your feeling on this? Do you have any strong feelings?
When they use the word refugee, are they saying about people that are in South Africa and they've actually been given official legal refugee status? Or is he talking about anyone who's just
anyone
in the country?
Anyone who just happens to be in. Mm.
So it's come about because of the truck drivers who took to the streets to protest against the hiring of foreign nationals. So... He's talking especially about that sector of the economy. But I think it goes for anybody. And I think this is why, and it is an interesting thing, because often people who have an ideological basis for the way that they decide on policy, like if you're on the right, you would say that borders do matter. If you're on the left, you say borders don't matter. But people on the right like the idea of free-flowing capital. And people on the left prefer state-controlled capital. So you have competing interests there, even on the ideological basis of some people's, you know, political leanings. So I don't know, but I do know for sure that everybody should have the right to seek employment. You cannot be prevented from seeking employment just because you're from another place. And that the employer has the right to hire whoever they like, whether they are refugees or immigrants or locals. And I don't see how this could be a problem. I think the truck drivers are upset because some of them don't have jobs. Well, I'm sorry, but that's the case for, what, 30% of our population? That we don't have jobs? So it's not just the foreign. And it's always like it's easy to go after the foreigners, you know, because they're different. And that's very tribal and it's very xenophobic. And that's why we see violence in so many parts of South Africa against foreigners, which I'm totally against.
Well, it's also just easy to lash out at what is close to you and what is,
yeah, what personally affects you. You don't hear of people starting up petitions to say, actually, we don't want the former CEO in China who's now based in South Africa. We don't want a whole UK consultancy now working for a South African company. It's now just this low hanging fruit, which most affects you in this case.
Yeah, sure. And it's easy to go after people who are worse off than you in society. People who have less rights than you do. And immigrants in this country seem to have less rights than the rest of us, which I think is a problem.
Yeah, but I still think what Damon raised is a good question to ask. Is it people who are from other countries who are now living and working legally in South Africa? Or is it anyone who might have gotten here somehow and we're still giving them the same rights? I don't know.
I don't think it matters. If someone is in a place and they can provide...
And also it comes down to another thing as well. Has there been a proper scientific study examining like how much jobs are being taken up by non-South Africans, and is it really, really an issue? And are they actually doing jobs, are they doing jobs that other South Africans actually want to do? Yeah. I mean, some of these refugees do the most awful jobs. They're gardeners, they this, they that, they working in terrible conditions. Maybe a lot of South Africans wouldn't want these jobs.
Is being a gardener a horrible job?
Well, it's not the greatest job in the world, that was just an example.
And that's very elitist of you to say that gardeners. I mean, I know some people who've got millions in the bank and they're retired, and their favorite thing to do is garden.
But there's a difference between pruning roses and then having to freaking dig up manure and whatnot.
Dig a big hole for my compost and
yeah.
Climb on a ladder and get on my roof and clear the leaves out the gutters.
You don't enjoy that stuff? I like that stuff. I like that stuff.
Get on the ladder and trim the hedges.
And no one's paying me.
No.
Well, why would you want to pay yourself? That's silly.
But then, you know, Damon as well.
I genuinely like getting my hands dirty sometimes and you know, doing stuff around the house. And it's because it's mine, obviously. But even if it wasn't, I think I can see why people take joy out of certain jobs. You know, be very careful not to say that just because you don't enjoy something that it's a demeaning job or that it's lowly or that it's a horrible job. I mean, I think being a bank teller is way worse than being a gardener. I would hate to be a bank teller. You know, especially when, like in the old days where people would sit behind a counter and stamp forms.
But a bank teller sitting on a chair, sitting in an air-conditioned room.
I'd rather be out in the environment. I'd really get a bit of sun, get fresh air.
Six or seven days a week at 200 or 180 rand a day.
Sure, different strokes for different folks. No one's going to pay a gardener 15,000 rand a month.
Well, that was my point. It's one of the bringing up a low paid job.
Okay, so
that's all I was doing.
So it's earnings that you're talking about.
Yeah, well, that's what I was alluding to.
A lot of people, again, Damon, that's just very facile. And for someone who's really, I mean, you're smart. There are lots of jobs that don't pay well. I mean, the president of this country and the president of the United States are paying themselves really small salaries, even though they've got very important jobs. By your logic, if it's about how much you earn, they are in low-paying, mediocre jobs. I mean, that doesn't make sense at all. You see my point?
I see your point, but I think you're being a bit weird about it.
I think you're being very, like, simplistic about it. Like, I would love to do certain jobs, and I would hate to do others. And to me, the amount of personal satisfaction I derive from it is far more important than how much I earn.
Gareth.
No.
I look at the guy who used to come to our house once a week. A 65-year-old man, ex-Zimbabwean. He's got a bicycle and he lives in a room at the back of someone's house. I mean, come on, that's not the greatest life in the world.
Damon, there are probably
half his teeth missing. I mean, really, that's not the greatest life.
And then you think, though, in the midst of everything, he wakes up saying, at least I get to contribute back to society.
At
least I get to pick up Damon Calvary's dog poos. I mean, really.
No, but if you listen to me, the fact that he's doing it is no one's forcing him, and you're not running at him at gunpoint saying, pick up those dog turds. He's like, there's this job on offer. I could take it, or I will starve. He doesn't have a lot of options. But there's also the fact that he does.
Well, who wants to be in a position where you don't have options?
Damon, he does have the option to say no. Everybody in the world.
Not really, because he has to survive.
He doesn't have to clean your dog turds. He could do many other things, and you could do many other things. I mean, you started your own perfume business. You could have stayed an estate agent. You hated that job.
Yes, but I mean, you're not talking about me now.
You're basically saying the different standards for different people, which is very, that's a very slippery slope to go down.
Hmm.
Start sounding a little bit like Favut by the end of it, trust me.
Really? Well, I'm sounding like Favut.
That's an old trope.
If you say...
It's good neighborliness.
No, if you say that certain jobs are acceptable for certain people, or that there are different standards for different people, that's...
I didn't say that at all.
You said, for me...
I said that's the way... I said a lot of South Africans don't want to do certain jobs that a more desperate refugee would do. That's all.
A lot of people...
How did we get here?
All right, let's carry on with the headlines. Special investigating units said its office is piling up with complaints against... Guess who? The Solidarity Fund.
Uh-oh.
Now, this fund was established, remember, and it's got billions of rands in it, by the government in order to help people who are suffering from unemployment and difficulties due to COVID-19. So apparently there are a bunch of vultures that have already got their talons and their beaks into the trough of the Solidarity Fund. And they are consolidating reports linked to COVID-19 Solidarity Fund. Say we've decided that we'll do a COVID-19 probe and we'll look into all the issues so we can deal with investigations that require our immediate attention. Government in the Eastern Cape is investigating a leaked invoice for a COVID-19 door-to-door awareness campaign. Six suspects linked to fraud in that situation were given 5,000 rand bail. We covered this story on Monday in the Commercial Crimes Court on Monday. And the money was intended for labor brokers to distribute to 1,400 UIF beneficiaries. So, you know, even when people are in huge crisis, that doesn't mean that the crooks stop being crooks. Horrible, horrible people.
It's really devastating. It's unbelievable.
According to the FBI, China is the greatest threat to the U.S. The director of the FBI, speaking at the Hudson Institute in Washington, described a multi-pronged disruption campaign. He said China have been targeting Chinese nationals living abroad, coercing their return, and was working to compromise U.S. coronavirus research. The stakes are very high, Mr. Ray said. China is engaged in a whole-of-state effort to become the world's only superpower by any means necessary. And by the way, I'd just like to say that there are a lot of people who listen to us in Hong Kong. And Hong Kong has basically, in the last couple of days, become a country of no liberty, a place of no liberty. They've been subsumed into mainland China. The rules have changed. If you were a person who believed in freedom and liberty in Hong Kong, and that was one of the reasons that you went there and you decided to do business there, then I'm thinking about you today, because it's changed. And nobody's paying attention to this because we're all caught up in our own worlds with coronavirus and Damon and I, you know, complaining about whether people have the right to X job or Y job. The reality is, for people in Hong Kong, they are now Chinese citizens with less rights than they had a couple of weeks ago when Hong Kong still maintained a semblance of independence. And this is a real world story and a real world situation where people are losing their rights. And I don't see too much in the media about it because it's not that interesting to people. But
I've seen quite a number of articles. But this director of the FBI, did he get more specific? Like, what What is China doing again? They're taking Chinese nationals that are all over the world and doing what with them?
They're using them, they're coercing them into giving them information, into helping destabilize the countries that they're in. I mean, here are some of the examples. He said, Chinese interference includes a far-reaching campaign of economic espionage, data and monetary theft, and illegal political activities using bribery and blackmail to influence U.S. policy. We've now reached a point where the FBI is opening a new China-related counterintelligence case every 10 hours. Of the nearly 5,000 active counterintelligence cases currently underway, almost half are related to China.
Gareth, I'm no expert on the intelligence and special secret services and that, but I mean, why is the director of the FBI announcing all of this? It's like Winston Churchill going on the radio and forewarning that they're about to do D-Day. It's like,
you want China to know that you're on their case.
Now they've been alerted and now they'll be extra careful.
No, this is good. You want China to know that they're not going to get away with this. That's good politics.
I don't know. I think you've just made them extra vigilant.
Vigilant?
Extra cunning.
U.S. is getting more vigilant. That's the point of the story. And if China know that the U.S. are more vigilant, maybe they won't start taking chances like they are.
Mm.
You think they're going to go even more underground with it?
They might go more underground. Is the story even true? That's another thing. I mean, this FBI guy could be wrong.
And China is a great country that's done nothing but good for the world.
This is my theory. Everyone's pointing fingers at President Donald Trump regarding his collusions with Russia, etc. This could be a thing to draw people's attention away from that situation.
Are you talking about the Russia hoax where he was not impeached and there was no evidence of...
Yes, that's irrelevant. I'm talking about...
It's irrelevant, but you just called him someone who was involved with Russia, and that's...
No.
Untrue.
Let me repeat myself. There's lots of attention, people, the media, the Democrats, talking about Russian collusion. They're still carrying on about it. Mm-hmm. So maybe this could just be another thing of distracting away from the whole Russia narrative. It's just a possibility. Truth is stranger than fiction.
Let me ask you this. Of all the countries in the world that you would want to live in right now, is China right near the top or is it near the bottom?
The very bottom.
Right. And the United States, are they near the top or near the bottom?
Bottom.
Really?
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, on what ground?
I don't like the look of the United States in the last year or two. The coronavirus is rampant, gun violence, racial polarization, there's tension. I don't like the look of it.
Okay.
I mean, in the past, if you asked me this question 2, 3, 4 years ago, I would have said, yeah, America near the top. But America doesn't seem like such a nice country like it used to look like. That's just my perception.
Who might be near the top? I'm just curious.
That's something I really thought about.
So compared to no one in particular.
Yeah, in South Africa. So near the top, I suppose, maybe England, maybe some of the Benelux countries or the Scandinavian countries, I suppose.
Okay.
But that's very hypothetical.
Okay.
New Zealand, I suppose New Zealand. New Zealand, maybe Australia.
Okay.
I don't think America's... You look very disappointed.
I'm curious about your way of thinking about these things, because I hear a lot of people criticizing the United States, and then I go, well, compared to what? Like, compared to which countries where you have as many rights as you do in America, or as many opportunities as you do in America? It's always interesting that people who criticize America don't seem to take any moment to think and reflect on the fact that nobody ever tries to escape from America to any of these other countries that you've mentioned. No one's going, oh, I've got to get out of America and get to China. It's so oppressive here. You know, all these people who are complaining about gun violence and racism and all the stuff you just mentioned. None of them are running to Venezuela or to Norway.
I'm looking at it from another point of view. I don't think America is immigration friendly like it used to be. You can't. Are you denying that?
There are just as many people coming into the United States now as there were during the Obama era, or during the Bush era, or during the Clinton era. In fact,
no, but
the rates are probably even more.
The rates of rejection is definitely gone up.
Well, we were just talking about immigrants to our country, and we had a big debate about what kind of jobs are acceptable to them. This is not something that the Americans aren't having. You don't see any irony in that?
Well, America, they have to have those same discussions.
Okay. Last story in the headlines this morning. Donald Trump has formally moved to withdraw the U.S. from the World Health Organization. He made his intentions.
He's making it happen.
Yeah, he made his intentions clear in late May, accusing the WHO of being under China's control in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic. Despite calls from the EU and others, he said he would pull out of the UN agency and redirect those funds elsewhere. He has now notified Congress and the UN of his intentions. The process could take a couple of months, but they're going ahead with it.
So what, is he going to make his own organization? The Trump Health Organization. Imagine that.
Well, it's called the Department of Health in the U.S. if
okay.
You're the president.
So will he put all those funds into that department?
What a shit show.
All right.
What an
bizarre
shit show.
Garrett, do you think that WHO is under the influence of China?
I think that the U.N., and most of its agencies are rubbish and bureaucratic and don't do anything for the world. I really genuinely believe that. I also think that if you're the country that's paying the most money to keep the UN afloat, you should be getting a return on your investment.
It might be so small-minded of me to be this shocked, but I'm so surprised that these once large, completely credible bodies are now becoming swill.
Maybe they were always swill and they just had very good PR.
I think, to go back to another story we discussed earlier, I think they're like NASPAS's magazine division. And NASPAS is more interested in what's going on with companies that are successful, like Tencent and, you know, their gaming division and that kind of thing. And maybe it's time to disinvest from those parts of your business. If you're a country, you have interests in certain organizations, whether they're NGOs or businesses, and you stop putting money into the ones that don't give you a return. That's all it is. It doesn't have to be emotional. And the WHO has not covered itself in glory during this pandemic, has it?
No, or their defense is also not up to par. It does not seem like they've been helping themselves.
If I were Donald Trump, I would carry on. I wouldn't stop there. I wouldn't stop with the WHO. I'd stop with the UN. I'd say, enough of that. We don't need to spend money on that organization anymore. It's become a laughingstock. It doesn't have any moral authority anymore. Neither does he, really, but, I mean, he can decide as president of the United States, and if the people don't like it, they can vote him out in November.
Oh, lest we forget there's that happening in November.
Don't we have an election at some point?
I
can't remember.
Yeah.
What happened? Wasn't there something in 2019, or was it?
I think we've got a provincial and local election.
There were elections in 2015, then there were elections in 2019.
Yeah, I think
the conversation that I saw a couple of days ago was around the fact that South Africa's not ready for a digital election.
I saw that, and it is meant to be next year. It's the provincial and local elections, and that's where you vote for your ward councillors. And, you know, Pumi was talking about this yesterday, and she said, this is really important because your ward councillor should be someone you actually know and that you can get hold of on your phone.
Oh.
Because that's how you...
Local municipality.
Yeah, because how else do you affect change, you know? And she makes a couple of good points on that front, so maybe we should talk to Pums about that next week. Anyway, it's 7 o'clock. We've got lots of other stuff to talk about. Damon is with us, and I've got some emails. I've got some messages to 0797482090. It is Wednesday, and we're talking to you this morning. Let us know what you're up to. Damon Calvari is here, Sia Sangweni, me, and you. So let's all talk. CliffCentral.com